So today's reading is from Mark's Gospel, chapter 8, verses 31 to 38. Then Jesus began to tell his disciples that the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things and be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He would be killed, but 3 days later he would rise from the dead. As he talked about this openly with his disciples, Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. Jesus turned around and looked at his disciples, then reprimanded Peter. "Get away from me, Satan," he said. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's. Then calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my message in these adulterous and sinful days, the Son of Man will be ashamed of that person when he returns in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." So there's some quite hard-sounding things in there and some hard-hitting things. Jesus, gentle, meek and mild, never held back when he needed to say something, and he would tell people straight without shying away at all. And sometimes these things can be hard to hear, and at other times they can be just what we need. But I just want to expand a little bit on what Jesus was doing here. Firstly, it's Jesus prophesying what's going to happen to him. Now, interestingly, he says he's going to be handed over by and rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. Now, Jesus did not have control of that. That is a decision that the leaders and all the religious people made for themselves. So Jesus wasn't saying, "I'm prophesying it, and then I'm going to make it happen." Actually, it's what happened to him. Jesus, of course, told them straight about the good news of the kingdom, but the people of the law didn't like that. So, of course, they would reject him. And then Jesus just wanted to encourage his disciples by saying, he will rise again on the third day. Now, if this is a plan of a leader coming down to this world, it sounds like a barking mad plan to me, according to our experience and our rational thinking and common sense. And Peter, on our behalf all those years ago, happily said to Jesus, "Oh no, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't go that. You shouldn't be rejected by the people and die and then rise again. No, no, no. That sounds barking mad, and you're just not thinking straight. That's a bizarre plan." But Jesus turns round and rebukes Peter. Very strong, actually. "Get away from me, Satan." Because actually, he could see beyond Peter's comments and see that Satan was desperately trying to stop Jesus from going to the cross, because Satan, I imagine, was aware that that would bring about his defeat. So let's try and tempt Jesus, because if Jesus has to face rejection, perhaps a little, "Oh, you don't have to face rejection and all that hurt. Turn away." You can just see Satan trying to deflect Jesus. But Jesus, "No. I know where I'm going. I know what I'm doing. I know the plan. I know the vision. I'm going that way. and no one, but no one, is going to stop me. So God, through Jesus, who was God as well, has a plan. And the plan, as we now know, came into being. But actually, all through the whole of the Bible, God has a plan to bring people back to him. He said to Abraham, I'm going to make a great nation of you. And we are that great nation that's come from Abraham via Jesus. God made a promise to Abraham and kept that promise. He made a promise to Moses and the Israelites that he would bring them out from slavery in Egypt. He kept that plan. If you read about it, it's a barking mad plan in our eyes. Loads of plagues, trying to get across some water, letting the Egyptians chase after them. But God kept his promise and kept faithful. God has some very absurd plans in our eyes. But I'm going to throw this one back and ask you a question, which is one that was asked by someone at theological college. How do you make God laugh? Correct. Thank you, Joe. Tell him our plans. I think that's really good. I was just going to give a little example of that, because when I first came here, 3.5 years ago now, amazing, eh? I came here with a plan. Every vicar comes with a plan for his first job. We've been through 3 years of theological training, and then we do 3 to 4 years in curacy, where we have to follow the vicar and his plans that he's following God on. And you kind of, I want to do my own thing. I'm anxious to get out and use my training for building a church. That's what I've been trained to do. So I came here with a plan. First part of the plan was, don't do anything major for the first year. Don't introduce anything major in year one. Equally, and this was with, I've got to be careful how I say this. No, I'm not going to mention this actually, because if someone hooks onto the website and hears it, they might be upset. I decided that I was going to not do much in the way of pastoral care. Great plan, this, isn't it? And I was going to try and train some people up to do pastoral care and equally focus on mission and how we could do mission in our community. Now, that's a very worthy thing to do. But I purposely thought, I'm going to just, turn that bit down. So there's two great plans I came here for, because I thought that's the way the church is going to grow. So part one, the 4 o'clock started, because a number of you all sat out there badgered me to start a 4 o'clock, because I asked you what do you want and you said a 4 o'clock, and I thought, oh, that's going to break my rule. I wasn't going to start anything new, because I was going to get my feet under the table and get to know how things work. But I thought, God, if that's of you, let's do it. Let's start a 4 o'clock service. And then after a few weeks, I found it quite tiring. I was getting worn out. And I thought, you know what? Let's make it once a month. Do you remember that meeting? Yeah? I was convinced that was my plan, not God's. That was my plan, to make it once a month and possibly even move it back to the 10 o'clock. If I'd listened to God, I would have found out that I was completely and utterly in the wrong direction. And there's me telling him, yeah, but I'll be fitter, healthier, I'll have less services, and I'll be able to do more of this mission stuff. Not realizing that that is the mission stuff. This is the mission stuff. People worshipping God is the mission stuff. So slap on the wrist for the vicar. Secondly, after 3.5 years, do you know what I spend most of my time doing during the week? Pastoral care, absolutely. Because I've learned from him above again that actually It is about building the people up. It's about bringing Jesus to people and helping them and facilitating them to connect with Jesus themselves and to find healing, to find restoration, and to be built up. Because ultimately, yes, that's what hopefully they will do for others. And then if I'm doing that with people and then people do that with others, then we can get actually the whole pastoral care and caring for one another and healing and restoration of people out and out to everyone. And while we're caring for people, we can proclaim the gospel when it's appropriate. That, for me, is the mission of Jesus. It ain't complicated. It ain't difficult. Well, they're talking about Jesus is always difficult. But the more we do it and get comfortable with it, the easier it will get. And that, for me, is what Jesus' plan is for us here in Cricklade and beyond to the surrounding areas and North Swindon equally, especially, because we know that God has got something planned for North Swindon. But it starts here. It starts here and it spreads out and it starts with us. Isn't that scary? Yes. But I must say, having now been working according to God's plan rather than the vicar's plan, it's starting to germinate and it's starting to happen. Small little seeds are getting planted. And I'm starting to see some of you out there starting to carry those words and that pastoral caring for others out and beyond. Some of us, it's more natural for. Some of us are stepping out more. I mean, I've heard stories of things that people out there are doing that come to me second and third hand. I think it's amazing. Someone from the United Church came to me the other day and said, she mentioned the name of someone out there, and said, well, they went to visit this particular person and bring them meals, and that's come second, third hand. And I think that's fantastic. The word is getting around that here is a church that are doing things and it's starting to spread. It happens not just at the 4 o'clock service. It's happening with people across the whole church here. But sometimes I think we're a little bit shy of sharing that, because it actually, for me, it really builds people up if we share what's going on and the good news of what's happening among us. That, I believe, is how Jesus wants us to build the church. It ain't preaching out on the streets. It's not even about just inviting people to services. We've had an awful lot of people come to various services. But the thing that holds people is not the style of the service. It's the relationship that's built with the individuals. And ultimately, the style of the service, so long as it's focused on Jesus, actually doesn't matter, because in theory, we should all be able to just come and worship no matter what. But of course, if the worship doesn't feel like it's pointed to God, it's difficult. Now, I've got another 20 minutes of material here, and I've realised I've already spoken for 15. So I just want to take one other point from this reading, and if you want to hear the other 10 minutes or so that I'll have left, please see me afterwards. That'd be interesting to see how many come. So, Jesus says, take up your cross and follow him. What does that mean? Now, it's easy for me to stand up here because I left behind my job. I left behind the place in Highworth where we were living, which was really comfortable and very happy, really nice existence. And we stepped out in faith, left it behind, and here we are today. So for me, actually, it's quite a bit easier. But before I did that, that for me is the difficult part, which I just want to share with yourselves, because God calls the vast majority to work in the world, to minister in the world and do what you're all doing. So whether it's looking after family, doing a job, whatever else you might be doing, looking after the older family, neighbours, you're all called to where you are at the moment by God, because that's the way the message will spread amongst the people outside who don't know Jesus. But what does it mean to take up your cross and follow him? It's about, for me, being sacrificial and willing to let go of things. So it's to stop holding things so tightly and thinking, I'm not letting go of that. So it's anything at all that we have that's holding us back, and it's starting to let them go. So it might be material things, for example. It might be that God says, I want you to live in a smaller house or a bigger house. It might be, I want you to give up your job and do another job. Or it might be, actually, I want you to fight for promotion in that job because you can do so much more where you are. It might be to sell a treasure collection at home and give the money to something that God's calling you to. And having a really valuable set of Doctor Who figures at home, that is probably the biggest issue I can have in letting anything go. Or it could be something spiritual, or it could be something mental. There are things that block us. And if we just hand those over to Jesus, let him take the problems from us, the issues from us, through someone else possibly, or even directly, then that just frees us to be able to do more of what he wants us to do. So I just want us to think, in silence in a few minutes, what's holding us back from fully taking up our cross and following Jesus? What is that thing that holds us back? So I'm going to finish there. And in a second, I'm going to ask for the Holy Spirit to come to help us to ponder, so that if we're thinking, I'm not sure what it is I need to focus on, I'm going to ask if the Holy Spirit could just come and give us some promptings of what he would like us to deal with next. There are always so many things, actually, but there's always one thing that he would like us to do next.